At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Petrified Podcast. I'm your host, Damon Martinez, here with my co-host,
Eric Lover.
Thank y'all so much for tuning in, guys. Hope you enjoyed last week's episode about us talking about Black Phone 2, and we hope you enjoyed the movie. It was great to us, and we hope you enjoyed it. If not, let us know on Instagram. You can follow us at Instagram. Link will be in the description of each episode. But today, we finally got to watch Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein. And let me tell you, man, it's been...
It does not disappoint.
It was amazing. If you've read the books, obviously, he goes pretty close to, obviously, you can't go word for word or anything like that when it comes to books to movie, but he comes pretty darn close, man.
Yeah.
And this movie amazed me. Obviously, all of his movies, they always deliver, but this one delivered, man. If you're looking for a movie just to kind of get lost in a story and in the world of the kind of gothic era of literature, this is it right here. I mean, applauds to him because it was great. I was amazed.
It came across as probably one of the best movies I've seen this year, actually. So, yeah, it was really good. If you're listening to us today, it actually is premiering on Netflix today. So,
yeah,
it dropped on Netflix this morning, so y'all will be able to, catch it at home, sit back, get a pizza, watch it. Because, yeah, it definitely, like you said, it does not disappoint.
Yeah, and I will tell you what, it was actually worth the price of the ticket, man. It was, if you're like, I don't know, it's going to come out on Netflix anyways, this was actually worth the ticket.
Oh, yeah. Seeing it on the big screen, just translating across. But it's like, like you said, he never disappoints. I mean, The Shape of Water was great. Pan's Labyrinth. It's banger after banger.
Oh, yeah.
He's like... I wish they actually would have had, because before this, a couple years ago, he did Pinocchio.
Yes.
And it was stop motion animation, and that was really great, too, and that's also on Netflix. So if you haven't seen it, it's really good.
It's good, man. He just comes out with good... I think just the kind of the world he brings, his touch that he brings to each world. Like, he did it with Hellboy. I mean, he gave that a unique look, and people have tried to top out. There's two movies out now that have tried to redo Hellboy, but he's just set a standard, man, that you just can't reach. I mean, the only one who could reach it is him if he does a third Hellboy. But all the actors are older now. So.
Yeah, you're not gonna get the same play across.
Yeah, but this one was amazing. Him talking about it too in interviews of how, obviously, seeing the original Frankenstein and being amazed by that. Monster, which kind of helped him push him towards what he does, obviously, now. But this one, was great. Don't want to spoil it too much. I mean, it's
Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've read the book, I mean, obviously, it follows the literary book a lot more than, obviously...
Than most of...
The universal classic that, we've all become accustomed to.
Yeah, or most of the recent ones that have, tried to follow it. This one actually goes... pretty darn close. The design of the creature, of the monster, was done really well. It's not a block-headed green monster.
Bolts in the neck, yeah. If you're expecting, the old Boris Karloff version that we reviewed a couple weeks ago, it's not going to deliver that same kind, but it is going to give you more of a backstory.
Yes. It's more of a backstory, and I don't even know how to explain it. It's just so... amazing. And it's cool to see stuff like that. I think the last one I was really surprised by was Nosferatu that Robert Eggers did.
Yeah.
When he did that movie, it's just giving it that actual gothic feel. And I think Guillermo del Toro, he really brings that to life, you know. And it could just be his influences as well, but he really brings that element, the actual true gothic element to these movies that he makes. And it just, yeah, man, it made it great. I mean, even the actors as well. Obviously, I'm going to give credit to him, but also the actors as well. You had Oscar Isaac play Victor Frankenstein. You had, oh my gosh, she's from Pearl, Maxine, and all that. I can't remember the actress's name. Forgive me. I know people are like, dude, it's this girl.
Yeah.
But she's in it, and she does really well. Again, it's one of those things where, like, okay, you're putting in her in here because of, like, the movie she's been in, or is it because you're actually going to give a good performance? Because I think sometimes with you have a good, like, scream queen.
And they just cast her in everything as, yeah. You know. But that's really something that I liked about this movie is it wasn't, like, overly hyped.
Yes.
It wasn't. So, you know, you think if you were going to ride on the coattails of, you know, Maxine, Pearl, and, you know, that trilogy, you'd have that thrown out there.
Yeah, and that's what I noticed about it is it wasn't, like, getting a lot of, like, there wasn't a lot of trailers. There wasn't a lot of, you know, people talking about it.
Which is funny because there was, like, a lot of hype. Like, this has been murmured about for quite a long time.
Yeah, for a while, yeah. When it first was announced that he was doing it, yeah, it was like, okay, great. Like, we'll see how it goes. But then...
Yeah, because it was kind of, like, on the, you know, on the tail end of, you know, the big Nosferatu.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was, you know, talking about it. And then the industry was a buzz. But this one just came through and it delivered. And yeah, it kind of came in silently. Like,
yeah,
we were surprised because we actually, you know, there were a couple theaters that got it here in Lubbock.
That's what I was surprised about because I was like, well, it's going to premiere in some movie theaters and then be out on Netflix. But actually ours locally, we're trying to get some stuff going through here.
Yeah. And it dropped on, you know, it dropped to me and to you that it was playing at Draft House.
Yeah.
And we were going to go see it at the Draft House. And then lo and behold, I was just scrolling and it was playing in another theater. And we only have 3 theaters here in Lubbock.
Yeah, we used to have 4.
So for 2 of them to actually be playing it was, you know, that shows that maybe, you know, the tides are changing here in Lubbock.
Who knows, man?
Yeah, if you're a fan locally, I mean, you know, give us a like, share, you know, hit us up.
It's that tech streak, man.
Yeah.
The football team's been going on a good streak, so that's probably what it is. Yeah. They're bringing some good juju back to Lubbock.
Yeah. Throw some films since we can't throw tortillas anymore.
Who knows, man? Who knows? They're still going to be tortillas thrown. But this movie was great, man, and I'm so glad we got to see it. I'm so glad we got another adaptation of the Frankenstein story. And actually, what I loved about it, too, is if you read the book, it's all told through... The first part is told through Victor Frankenstein's point of view as he's dying, as he's found by the sea captain in the Arctic. And that's what I liked about it. It's not told like, it's not just the story being just played out in front of you. It's actually being like told to you and then you're seeing it happen.
And the best part about it too is that, you know, you assume that, you know, the creation is the monster. And
yeah,
it's like, but then you get, basically, before the sea captain is actually able to discern and make his own assumption, he gets the side of the story from the creation.
Yeah.
And like...
See, that's what I've always loved about the story of Frankenstein. The book is that you see how he, through his point of view, through the creation's point of view, and how he felt, and which, of course, he was done wrong. You know, you created me, but now you don't want to teach me or love me, pretty much.
Yeah.
Of course, until the end, but that's what I've always loved about it. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, no, you're good.
But yeah, that's what I liked about it is that you see also the creature's point of view.
Yeah.
It's not just a horror film of just the monster. It's an actual, like, you know, story from both perspectives.
Yeah, and you think, you know, I mean, it's also got, you know, all the spiritual undertones, just like the book had. It's like, you know, this person created this being,
yeah, to play
and
God.
Then just discarded it because he wanted to play God, and then he just discards it and gives, you know, basically what they want to deem the monster. And that's where I like, you know, that this movie comes in and kind of you know, I love the Universal Monsters. I love Karloff. I love what he did. But it's like they make it seem like he's just this monster. And, you know, Dr. Frankenstein is kind of, it's kind of got like that little wicked streak.
Yeah, like but, he's just freaked out by his creation.
Yeah, he's just like scared. But it's like, no, this really gets in depth to the point even where obviously, you know, other characters in the film start to notice, obviously, just like in the book, that basically, you know, he is so cruel to his creation.
Yeah.
Like, and really, technically, the creation has all right to be, like, pissed and doing what he does.
Yeah. And it also shows, too, whether it was intentional or not, is that pretty much mankind is not fit. Humans aren't fit to play God. You know, because that's what he wanted. That was his huge obsession with making, pretty much creating life, was that anybody can play God and anybody can live forever. And him, you know, rejecting his creation showed him that, you know, mankind can't play God, you know. You can create, you can try to create, but, and that's the thing too, is the parts that he's taking, it's not from, like, he's not creating these body parts. He has to, you know, get them from.
He's just reviving things that were already, you know, they were already incarnate. And he's just coming through and.
And see, that's what I loved about the design of the monster is that, what's cool is, like, you can see, obviously, where his skin is put together, you know.
Yeah, it's, you like, know. Some is flesh tone. It has, like, a rosy hue on his forehead and his nose. And then, like, other parts are, you know.
Like, dead or decaying. Yeah.
And they're, like, a transparent blue, and you can see.
Because the little, which you probably notice, is that, you know, he's getting bodies not just from fresh victims that are being hanged, you know. He's also getting already dead victims. So now you see the two skins being put together. The fresh skin and the already dead skin, which I thought was a good little touch. Like,
yeah,
that's why he's like blue and has regular colored skin, is because.
Well, speaking of those little touches, something that we touched on before we started recording is, obviously one of, you know, Del Toro's first films was Kronos, in which it basically was a, almost like a clockwork mechanical scarab beetle that, you know, thrived off of eating blood.
Yeah.
And the actual mechanism that the doctor puts on the creation's chest to reanimate it, to basically, you know, take the electrical charge to bring it back forth, is, it looks almost like the Kronos beetle. Yeah. It has like four legs and it snaps on and it's all, it's like mech in it.
Yeah.
Like, and I love the fact that, you know, he paid that in homage to basically, like, those who've seen Kronos in his older films.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, there's little bits and pieces of his own creative nature within the film itself.
Yeah, man. And again, it just, and not only that, just the designs that he has too in his films, you know, having a lot of people who, and the set designers are just like
every film that he does, man.
Yeah.
And I like that because I like the fact that the films, basically they take you, they transport you to a different place. When you go into one of these films, you are never going to like come out the same as when you went in.
Yeah.
Because literally, you're taking 2.5 hours to go, like, Pan's Labyrinth. You're going to go into the forest. You're going to see the fawn. You're going to go on this adventure. It's going to pull you in. Hellboy did the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
It takes you to, like, the evil Nazi scientist, and it walks you around, and you feel for this little hell brat that gets, like, you know, birthed into the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Mike Magnolia and them signing off and, you know, Dark Horse allowing him to improve, like, even Abe Sapien. The fact, you know, everything that was presented that he does, it's magical.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's something that, like, a lot of films lack. I mean, obviously.
Yeah. It's like a mixture between fantasy and like gothic.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what makes his movies very unique.
Yeah. It's like Universal meets the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
It's like you go to, like, these transcendent places and
Yeah, and it's a long movie, so yeah, you're going to need some popcorn and a drink, because it's a long movie, but it's worth it. Like, the journey, you know, it's not going to leave you like, oh, this part's boring or whatever, because it's telling you the whole story, and you get fed more and more, and that's why it's just like the book, because it's just like, it draws you in. Yeah,
it even gives you the chapters, basically.
Yeah, and that's what I love about it, too,
It walks you through, and so if you've read, you know, Shelley's book, you can obviously go through and, you know, chapter one, this, that, and it basically walks you through just like you're reading a story.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can't just get up in the middle. I mean, now you can, because, you know, like I said, I think it's really great that they released it theatrically, because I think it's a movie that definitely needed to be released. It needed to be seen on the big screen. But now that you can enjoy it from home, you know.
Go for it, yeah. Yeah.
Get some popcorn, get a pizza, sit down.
And enjoy it. Yeah. Because it is a amazing journey seeing it. Because obviously, there's, like I said before, there's been many, many adaptations of the book. And I think some of them were told pretty good, but I think this one actually gives it justice, like actually does it good, and it takes you on that journey through this gothic era of literature and just depression and, you know, the questioning of can man play God and stuff like that, and also putting yourself in the shoes of, and I think a lot, that's what kind of how people feel too, especially at that time, is like they felt like the monster. They felt like, you know, why am I abandoned? Why has God abandoned me? And I think that's what's good about this too. It just shows you both perspectives, and you can fit into both perspectives.
Yeah. Yeah. All persons have that duality.
Yeah.
They have the, you know, you will have that, you know, you have a bit of a God complex.
Yeah.
You know, we were created in the image, so it's just only right that you would assume that on occasion.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you come through and you also realize that, like, and that's what I love, the fact that the roles keep reversing ever so constantly, because as, you know, as the Mariner continues to hear the tale that Victor is, you know, spinning to him, it's turning around, and, you know, he starts to almost, you know, go to Victor's side and almost feel a sympathy towards him.
Yeah.
But then you realize that, you know, the creation is here, and the creation only wants, essentially, he didn't ask much of Victor. All that he asked is that he be given, like, a partner. It's what everyone in life wants. You want a soulmate. You want, you know, you want that person. And Victor continually rebuffed him and gave him nothing.
Yeah.
And just, you know, and you know, lied to him at every, you know, at every step that he was going to provide him with this. And in the end, you didn't even really have to create. He could have just literally been that person himself. But it was too much of a smug ass, and therefore that's what ended up happening.
Yeah, but he didn't realize it until he was dying, and he realized pretty much the world and that old man in the shack pretty much taught the creature everything he needed to know.
Yeah, because, I mean, he comes back, and, you know, basically the creation that you left, that you abandoned, you know.
It took a blind man to actually...
But, I mean, it comes back so eloquent to, like, bite you in the beat. Like, seriously, like, it's crazy.
Oh, that whole scene around the ship, man, where he's just, like, throwing people off and they're shooting at him and he can reanimate, like, just heal himself, like Wolverine.
But the crazy part about it is that he doesn't even realize it to a point. He doesn't realize that these things are supposed to, like, fell him, that he's supposed to die.
Yeah, he's supposed to die, He doesn't realize that until he starts learning from the old man.
Yeah.
That he's supposed to be mortal, but he's not. Yeah, because when he gets killed the first time, he just says, like, he fell asleep, and then he woke up. He's like, it was hours of darkness, and then he woke up, and he was alive again.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, that's so crazy.
But I wonder if that isn't somewhat, too. I mean, like, I'm not going to get too spiritual into it, but the way that I kind of interpreted that is just like when I read the book also is that's kind of, like, spiritual in nature, of the fact that you didn't realize anything was wrong until you ate the fruit.
Yeah.
Like, then you start realizing, like, hey, like, I'm not supposed to die.
You know? Once he started getting the knowledge.
He started getting the knowledge and just, like, you know.
Yeah, and the blind man, too. And that's what was the crazy thing about Victor not wanting to be the God that he, you know, this creation is supposed to have, is it took a blind man, you know, to pretty much raise him. Because he was, like, a child. And... you know, the one that couldn't see visually is the one who saw the creator, the creation the most. He knew him. He was his friend. But, you know, Victor actually having sight could not see that he, you know.
He was too full of himself.
Yeah, he was too full of himself, yeah.
So.
Yeah, man. It's such a good movie. It's so great. And I can't wait for more of these kind of, which we talked about it before in previous episodes about the, you know, resurgence of these monsters kind of coming back and actually.
Yeah. I would just like the resurgence of great storytelling.
Yes, man.
I mean, you don't have to have an $80 billion budget.
No, you don't.
You can come up with a great story and just basically present it properly.
Yeah, which this one was. And there's a little setup for a bride, you think?
I think there's a little setup for the bride. I think, you know, we might be seeing that. You never know.
There was a little setup, man. It might. If he does it, as long as he does it.
Yeah. Then nobody else is going to be able to take the helm. Because
we saw another bride movie coming out with Christian Bale playing Frankenstein.
Yeah. That's coming out. Let's not convolute the lines between these two movies.
These are very. No, but I mean, everybody's gonna see the preview.
Oh yeah,
they're gonna see the trailer, and so which is so crazy that, you know, this movie also being announced, the Bride, and then of course Guillermo del Toro, you know, releasing Frankenstein. I don't know, man. It looks pretty good, but. I don't know.
Well, see, here's what I like about Del Toro's Frankenstein. It was a period piece. It kept with the period. It didn't convolute the lines. It was directed and shot in 2025.
Yes.
And it might have started in 2024, but needless to say, it came out this year.
Yes.
But it didn't blur the lines. It didn't have to give me, even though, I mean, you could have gone into all kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, like the turmoil in between different countries, because obviously Victor going from Geneva to other parts of the world.
Yeah,
you could have definitely gone through. You could have thrown in some Middle East stuff. You could have, like, you might have put the boat in Palestine, but it didn't need it. It kept with the period as originally it should have been. Whereas the Bride. It almost has like a noir feel to it.
Yeah, it's set in the 20s, I think.
Yeah, it's set in like, you know.
1920s,
It has this, to me, it has like a Sin City, A Dame to Die For feel to it.
Yeah.
Mixed with somewhat of the Joker part.
Yeah.
And, you know.
That's what I noticed too,
That to me.
And the Crow, new Crow. Not the old one, the new Crow.
Yeah, the Skarsgård Crow.
So we'll see how it is.
We'll see. I mean, I'll give it a try, but. It's not going to compare in any way, shape, or form to this film because, like I said, I think knocked it out of the park. Del Toro knocked it out of the park on this one. He always does, but with this one especially.
Yeah, with this specific piece, he... Yes.
Like I said, because Pinocchio was his own rendition of Pinocchio.
I loved it. It was great.
It was good. It was his own take on it. Obviously, Kronos was his own creation, the Devil's Backbone.
Yeah.
That was all stories he'd heard as a child in Guadalajara. So that all came through. But, you know, this in itself, you know, basically, I think Shelley would have been proud. I think she totally would have signed off on this one.
Yeah.
All day. You know,
just to see it come to life. Yeah.
Absolutely. Be you know, it's not 100% with the book. It isn't. There are little parts where it varies, where he, you know, takes liberty. But he takes liberty respectfully.
Yes, respectfully. And that's like, one thing I did like about it is like, yeah, of course you're going to have, you know, some liberties that you're going to take, but to do it in a tasteful way, I think it was, it was good, man. It was entertaining. It draws you in, takes you on a journey, and it leaves you like amazed at the end of the movie when those credits roll and seeing everything, you know, the conclusion of the movie, it's just great. And the actor who played the monster he did amazing.
Yeah.
Especially acting like a newborn child, you know, because obviously a lot of movies before when they show like the monster, it's like, you know, he's this, you know, he's scared, you know, brooding monster, you know, but this one he's actually curious. He's more curious like a child is.
Yeah.
Very curious. He's not scared until Victor starts to instill fear into him, and when he starts to become
He starts imprinting on him, and then he becomes scared. The thing that I liked about that aspect was some movies basically they take it that, like, you know, you have the hand of a murderer or whatever, or the eye of, you know, a serial killer, and so it'll due to the fact that you got that man's eyeball, you know, and
the first one,
and I think there are some obvious, you know, there are some movies that have pulled that off very well.
Yeah.
You know, where you get, like, you know, dead man's eye, and it, like, you end up seeing murders and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and that's great. I mean, that works well. But I like the fact that, the fact that you're built out of serial killer parts or someone who was in a hangman's noose, that doesn't mean that that's imprinted on your flesh. It's imprinted on your spirit.
Yeah.
And that's where I think this comes off good, is that, yeah, like you're saying, he's nursed up from a child,
yeah,
and he doesn't really, he's very playful until basically, you know, Victor starts being a jerk and, you know, basically rejecting his creation.
Yeah.
And that's obviously, and even through all that, you know, the creation is still susceptible to basically take Victor back in, to bring him into the fold. He still wants to learn. That's his father.
Yeah, that's his creator, yeah.
Yeah. But so
he didn't want to, man.
Nope.
God, yeah, it was. It's so good, yeah. Yeah, go check it out, because this is a movie. And, hey, wait till Netflix releases it. It'll be released on Netflix now when this comes out. And go check it out, because it is something to watch. And now, it's not like a quick movie, so, yeah, again, you got to get set up for it. You got to have a set the night aside and, you know, dive into this movie, because it is worth the watch. It is worth the, over 2 hours?
Yeah, it's about 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it is worth all that time, because, yeah, it's been...
I don't know. I didn't even feel, like, to me, dude, it didn't even feel like it was 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it felt long, but it was, like, good. It was, like, all right, yeah, this is a good movie.
It was like the book. You didn't want to pull away. Like, yeah, you literally cracked that book. You cracked the binding, yeah, and you went for it.
Yeah, it wasn't like the third Godfather, where you're like, all right, is this going to end?
Where's the horse at? Where's Corleone? Yeah.
Yeah, this is definitely worth the watch, and I can't wait to see, was it the werewolf movie that Robert Eggers is coming out with? We'll see how good that's going to be. He's really good, too, about keeping in time as well.
Oh, yeah, with Nosferatu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's really good about that. What was it? The Lighthouse.
Yeah.
He's really good at, like, kind of keeping in that time and bringing you into a different world.
I don't know, man. That was a whole nother level on the Lighthouse.
But it was weird. It was a good weird.
It was good weird. I mean, yeah. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's actually
a lot of people didn't.
Well, I believe it's the 17th or the 14th of this month. It's actually coming back to theaters. It's not coming to Lubbock. But if you want to see The Lighthouse on the big screen,
it's showing near you.
Yeah, it's definitely something that, like, it piqued my interest. I wanted to go see it in the theater.
Oh, yeah.
I only remember when it was, like, vaguely released on DVD, and that's when I scoped it.
Yeah.
But
so I'm excited, man, yeah. And we're finally in the new studio, so if it sounds a little bit better, that's why. Finally got everything set up.
No more chihuahuas barking or sport bikes racing outside the window.
That's what made this podcast great, man. That's what made the episodes great, is you heard the background noise.
Yeah.
Now it's a little more, you can tell it's a little more quality. Hopefully it sounds good to y'all, everybody listening. Yeah, and I'll take pictures and put them up on Instagram so you can see what the studio looks like. I got everything set up. It looks pretty good. Got the Evil Dead stuff out. Got the Texas Chainsaw Massacre stuff out and the Halloween stuff set up. So.
Yeah, it's like an Evil Dead seance room now.
Hey, man.
It's like the whole table just set up.
Yeah, I'll post it on Instagram. So go to Instagram, follow us there so you can see what it looks like. Other than that, guys, that was our review of the new Frankenstein movie. Go check it out. It's going to come out on Netflix when this episode comes out. It'll be the same day. Go check it out. Then follow us on Instagram and tell us what you thought about it, what you loved and hated about it. If you hated anything about this movie, it better be just the runtime. That's it was too long. That's a good complaint, though.
If you drink like a big old soda and you like had to take a leak for like the last 40 minutes, I understand.
But other than that, guys, thank y'all so much for listening. We will see y'all
next week.